Playing the hits and your favorites of yesterday and today.
Well, good evening and welcome to the NMF podcast with me, Dennis Devlin. And coming up on tonight's show, it's a belter. We talk to the Dictator Band. In the meantime, some of this.
The best songs on the radio. This is my only favorite station. much more sexy tracks coming up.
All of my best friends are all finding dead ends, and they won't come back again. No, they won't come back again. They all said their goodbyes, turned off Mulholland Drive, and they won't come back again. No, they won't come back again. When I'm with you, I don't care. When I'm with you, I don't care. just shuffled along, and they won't come back again. No, they won't come back again. I ran out of time, you kept it on your side, and they won't come back again. No, they
the hits and your favorites of yesterday and today.
This tempo's way too slow to tell you all there is to know, so I'm going to speed it up. Here we go. When you're holidaying in Rome, but you want it to look like you're at home, Hive Active lights will come on at night to make your living room nice and bright. Or if you left work in a hurry and you're trying to save some money, Hive Active plugs let you turn your appliances off whilst you're having your ear chewed off by your boss. How about you're at a romantic dinner for two and you want to check your kids home by curfew? Hive sensors monitor your front door so they won't be sneaking home late anymore. Whew. Because with Hive, you control your home from your phone, from your lights to your plugs to your sensors. See what else you can control at hivehome.com. Hive products work with Hive Hub. Requires
Where are you? Are you in bed? Or are you leaving the first human footprint on Mars? Are you jogging? Or are you about to pull off the heist of the century? Are you in your car? Or are you praying those red eyes in the darkness can't see you? A voice in your ear can take you anywhere.
Audible. Get your first audiobook for free and feel every word. $7.99 a month after 30-day trial. Starts automatically. Terms apply.
Are you ready? Much more sexy tracks coming up.
When I'm with you by the amazingly talented Sam Lambeth, who I recently spoke to on the podcast. Stay tuned for that. Prior to that, it was 4,000 Miles and Reflections, and In Days Gone by the Dictator Band, who of course are coming up next after the break.
Playing the hits and your favourites of yesterday and today.
Where are you? Are you in bed? Or are you leaving the first human footprint on Mars? Are you jogging? Or are you about to pull off the heist of the century? Are you in your car? Or are you praying those red eyes in the darkness can't see you? A voice in your ear can take you anywhere.
Audible. Get your first audiobook for free and feel every word. $7.99 a month after 30-day trial. Starts automatically. Terms apply.
The best songs on the radio. This is my only favorite station.
Oh no! Little Timmy's got hold of a marker pen. My wall looks like a coloring book. What am I gonna do?
Flash! Ah! Clears up the impossible! Wow, he's really made a mess. It's a pain, but we won't stress. In the hall, he's drawn overall on the wall. Lots of scrolls, but we can clean this up.
Flash Magic Eraser, we love you.
Flash! Ah! Clears up the impossible!
The hits just keep on coming. Are you ready?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Very good evening to Zach and Michael from the Dictator Band. Good evening, guys.
Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
All right, big man. Brilliant, brilliant. It's good to have you on board. How are you all doing?
Living the dream, mate. Living the dream. I managed to get out for a pint on Sunday, but other than that, I've been lying in bed with COVID the last 2 weeks, so I'm just appreciating everything now, to be fair.
I'm glad you're well, mate. I hope you're feeling better, pal. It's brutal, isn't it?
Aye, it was a lot worse than I was expecting. Not sure what I was expecting, to be fair, but it wasn't that.
Well, I'll tell you what, boys, you better get your passports ready, because whoever decided to put that tweet up about whatever city or country you're from, I'm going to do a tour in.
Mate, honestly, when the Barcelona and the Miami's come through, we are off. We are out of here, ASAP.
I stuck doing Sarajevo, Las Vegas, and Timbuktu.
Mate, we'll go there. If the fans are there, we'll go there too, man.
Of course, there's fans there. Everywhere you go in the world, there's somebody Scottish, isn't there?
I know, mate.
So, how are you guys doing? How's everything?
Aye, it's all good, mate. We're all just buzzing off the latest release. Yeah, we've had an amazing response, as seems to be the norm for us now. So, we're all just buzzing off of that, mate. Aye, we're good.
Things are really going for you guys. What got you guys into music,
Michael?
Well, to be fair, man, I've kind of there's a couple of things that got me into music. So, like, my dad used to have like a wee Casio keyboard, right? And that was my first kind of inkling of getting into music. Just to sit there and try and it used to play tunes, so I'd try and match the tunes, and then moving into like primary school, primary seven, the bass player in the band, Joe, the two of us kind of started playing guitar around the same time. And moving into high school, we obviously joined, we started a band, whatever you want to call it, if it wasn't really much a band. But the things that kind of got us in, that's the first part, that's the kind of, you're early, like your formative years of like actually music and enjoying it. But what got us into music, I think, was like just, like there was a couple of bands, you had Arctic Monkeys, you had Kasabian, you had The View all kicking off, and The View were actually quite big for us because they were Scottish and stuff. And I think that was the first time that you kind of looked at it and went, hold on a minute, we could maybe go and start a band. We could play music live like that. We could do it. Like, it was kind of within your grasp. So I genuinely think after that, and then the explosion of Arctic Monkeys and that scene, the Cortinas, everybody, all these bands just coming out, and it really kind of inspiring. And that's kind of what I think has made us get more into music, you know what I mean? Like actually starting a band and actually wanting to give it a go and say like, no, this could be amazing, you know?
I would say my story's pretty much the same as that, mate. Although I didn't come from a musical family, I didn't start creating music and learning to play music until I got to that point where I discovered Arctic Monkeys and The View and all of that. But similar origins.
Would you say that was your inspiration to make music?
Aye, that's probably the best way to put it, is that, so like when you're younger, you just want to play the songs you like. You just want to hear it and be like, oh man, like how do I, like I remember I went to a Calvin Harris, before he was like a DJ in that, right? Yeah, I think that was my first ever gig in the Liquid Rooms. And I mind coming back and he had these mad synth sounds. And I just wanted to try and make the same sounds. Like, as daft as it is, I was like, how do you do that? And I got really good at making the same sounds. I was like, right, yeah, I'm gonna try and do it. And then I think as you progress, you start, it's like making music becomes more of a thing. Because then you actually go, hold on, I didn't even want to play their songs. I want to see if I can write songs. Then you start getting inspired by other things. And like that, those bands and stuff that we've mentioned, they make you want to go and write your own songs. Because that's what they've done. They were all covering everybody else's songs before, then they just went, nah, you know what? Let's just go and write our own.
Creating good music wasn't that important for me at the beginning, to be honest. It's quite different. It was all about the experience and the performance for me, I think, back in the days. We just loved getting all our mates together on a bus through to Glasgow and having a mental night. It was fun, but actually creating good music was kind of came secondary to that, unfortunately. Thankfully, I've teamed up with Michael now and we're actually creating good music. So
absolutely. What is the band's creative process like? And do you experiment quite a lot?
I'll leave that to Michael. Yeah, I'll leave that one to you, mate.
So to be fair, I start writing the majority of the songs, right? What I'll do is we just wrote a song, like not too long ago. Actually, the funny story is that we were the day we were due to record the actual song was the day that I found out I had COVID. He had a fever and that, so we had to cancel it. And honestly, try to get a slot with these guys because they're brilliant. It's like we're talking about like 6 months before we can get back in. But anyway, what normally happens is I sit with a kind of synth and I just play music, right? But I don't play it like cathartically, like Zach kind of mentions that, like it's really relaxing to just play music. I don't do that, right? Anytime I sit down with an instrument, I just want to, like I end up recording stuff. That's a wee bit, like I don't know how to describe it other than like that's a wee bit I could maybe, that's maybe be a chorus, that maybe be a start of another song. And so it's like this mad professor way of like the way I relax is actually just recording about 30 different songs, like wee bits of songs, and then after like 5 or 10 different variations I get onto something. And so like I sat down, played like, and I just pick a voice, say for instance on the keyboard, and I'm like, right, that's the kind of vocal sound, that's the synth sound that we're going for. And then I just, sometimes it just happens, you just write a full song and then you've got your verse, your chorus, you've got your middle eight, you've got all your parts that you need. And then I just kind of layer it up. I put some drums in it just to see what it would sound like. I maybe record a couple of different variations of a bass line and then I leave the guitar out and then I do add in a couple of other bits of synths and then I send it to the boys. That's pretty much what happens. I have like a wee demo and I send it to the boys.
Then we tell them to say.
They come back and say, that's pants, Michael. That's absolute pants. That is rubbish. Are you kidding me on? Have you ever written a song before in your life? Nah. Hey, like normally it's like, it's either like, genuinely there is nothing in between. It's either a banger or absolute dreadful, right? I'm sitting there and I'm just too far down the line where I'm thinking it's completely normal. That I mind I've done one and it sounded really like Moby. But we listened to it back and it was like, I had like an African choir going and all that. I was just like, that's too much. And they're sitting listening to it going, aye, that's shite, mate. That's no good. And I'm like, right, fine. So then, but then other times they did it and they're like, I know, we really like that. As soon as we get I really like that, Michael, we jam it. That's what I bring along the track and I'm like, everybody kind of learns their own parts, puts their own spin in it. And then it just evolves. And I think I used to have this romantic notion of like, you write a song and that's you. You write a song on the acoustic guitar and that's you. I mean, top, that's your number one. You're sorted. Whereas actually the older I'm getting, the more we do this, your songs always evolve. You start off with this wee kind of thing and actually the more people that get involved, the more producers that you speak to, the more like people who hear it, you actually start, and that's actually the best part of the creative process is actually getting everybody's opinions and putting things in, trying different things, really try to push the boat out and actually saying, why are you sticking with that voice just because that's the one you wrote it with? You know what I mean? Let's change this. Let's add in a different instrument. Let's get rid of the original part you had. Let's try this. It's kind of like that. Yeah. Sorry to waffle on, but that's the part of the writing songs that I really enjoy the most.
It's good to hear that. A famous poet called Wilfred Owen once wrote Anthem for a Doomed Youth. Did that inspire your song?
He did. It certainly did. Sorry, Zach, do you want me to take this one?
No, it's your, you wrote the song, mate.
So, right, I've got a kind of, I don't know what to say, infatuation, right? But when you're younger, fancy Wilfredo. fancy his poems, mate. Nah, to be fair, right, we had, when we were younger in school, we learned about a poem called Dulce et Decorum Est. It's a Wilfred Owen poem, really famous. It's probably his most famous poem, right? And that was my only kind of exposure, especially at that age, to poetry, what it was. And like where we were from, the type of people that we are, you didn't exactly, like when you're going for a kickabout with your mates, you didn't turn around and say, boys, I've wrote a poem. Anybody want to hear it? Like, you know what I mean?
No, mate, that's when you get launched. That's when you get launched.
So... Wait, that's not exactly the kind of background that we're from. That wouldn't fly, right? But that was my only exposure to poetry and learning about the meanings behind. And I firmly believe that a lot of these guys, by the way, just write a really nice poem and then, like, English teachers about 20 years later come and make up mad meanings for the poem. the guys are like, no, I didn't think that, mate. Like, you know what I mean? I used alliteration here and this is a metaphor for, like the way that life consumes you. And No, it's no. He's talking about changing his bed sheets. You know what I mean? It's something daft like that. But yeah, so anyway, Wilfred Owen, Dulce et Decorum Est. I went away and kind of read some of his poems. And he is one of the main kind of, it was just through no fault of, like, I mean, it's just pretty much that's who I learned about. He is my kind of main reference point for poems. And a lot of the work that we do somehow just seems to get incorporated with his poem. We've actually got another song that'll come out in due course, and it's a reference to another poem that he'd done. But Anthem for a Doomed Youth was a nod to him without being too, we've not taken any of the poem or taken any of the meanings behind it, but he is a kind of inspiration, as mad as that is.
Zach, do you find that, I don't know if you've watched, I'm obviously guessing you've watched Trainspotting, and there's a character in it called Spud. You listen to Michael right now talking about his fascination with what we're doing. You know that? Zach, you know that?
The job interview scene.
Aye. I mean, Michael, I can't
Your
imagine.
Your leisure is my pleasure.
That's exactly it. So, Michael, when you turned up for a kickabout with your pals, I mean, when I was a kid running about in Glasgow, I mean, a kickabout meant a kickabout in the park, and if you're lucky, you found a scud mag in the hedge. Obviously, right. you're turning up with Wilfred Owen magazines. Did you find yourself not playing a lot of football with your pals?
It was just Wilfred Owen and the scud, mate. That's all it was. Not about the bombs. I duly kept it to myself, mate. I just sat there and went, actually, nobody wants to hear my poems. Let's just go for a kickabout. And then what happens, right? You actually go through a full role reversal where you're like, you turn your nose up at it between the ages of maybe 12 and 18. You're like, that's daft. I'm not getting involved in that. Everybody leaves school, sees the real world, and then goes, shit, I really wish I'd done the poems in that. and then everybody who'd kind of been secretly getting into it is away writing songs, away getting into these creative things, and everybody's like, you know, I just wish I had taken up an instrument when I was younger. No, mate, you were too busy. You were too busy trying to find the scud marks in the bushes. That's what happens.
There's some amazing music coming out of Scotland. I mean, one of the bands I like is Glass Vegas, and also Jerry Cinnamon. It's an explosive time in Scotland, and you're part of that. How does that feel?
It's incredible, mate. It's very humbling as well, to be honest. To even be, like, you've just brought up Glass Vegas and Jerry Cinnamon. It's humbling just to be included in the same sentence as them. The scene here is incredible. It's absolutely electric just now. I've never ever known it to be as exciting as it is right now, and it's really really. It's really gratifying to be part of it. Even you say Scotland, but even West Lothian, just where we're from, the scene here is incredible. And just to be a part of that, let alone the wider Scotland, is just something else. It's very special.
It's brilliant. One of the quotes I read here is, "The band is one of the best things to come out of Scotland since the A74."
Wait, where did you read that? Was that in your press kit?
It was Googled. I was Googling you about using that, and it came up on the Cumbernauld Chronicle or something, or Cumbernauld News, which is a local press. So you're better than A74, pal, considering everybody hits A74.
That's getting put straight in the press kit, man.
Absolutely. Guys, if you, who would you most like to collaborate with in the future?
Michael.
Zach wants to collaborate.
I just want a part in the songwriting process, mate.
He's not getting involved. I just tell him what his guitar fit is and just shut up and play it. And he's like, what about this? I don't care. Shut up and play it. I really like Billie Eilish, right? Billie Eilish and her brother. Just the way that they create music. It's really kind of like it's home studio-esque, but they really kind of push the boat out with how they record it. They also use Logic, which is a kind of software I use for recording. And I've just always been interested in like, I think, in all honesty, that would be one artist, because Billie Eilish isn't just, you know what I mean, her, it's supported by her brother as well. One artist to work with would be that for me.
We get asked this question quite a lot, and the answer changes quite a lot as well. But I know when you're given the option to like collaborate with anyone all over the world, but there's loads of Scottish artists that I really want to collaborate with. One I've been particularly obsessed with recently is the hip-hop group Stanley Odd.
Brilliant. Absolutely outstanding.
It's just really interesting and exciting what they're doing. The way that Dictator formed is we were trying to sort of push the boat out and what we could do creatively. And I feel like what Stanley Odd are doing with their music is they're pushing the boat out as well. So that's something that I'd like to see if we could ever make happen.
So who came up with the idea of Dictator and, you know, the reasons behind that?
You want me to take this, Michael?
Yeah, man.
So it goes back to the creative process that Michael just described for you, mate, about how we go about writing songs. It was kind of a running joke the way that, you know, myself and Alan, our drummer, and Joe, the bassist, we've all played in bands together sort of in bits and bobs over the years, but quite often our creative process just tends to be just get in a room and jam out and see what happens. Whereas Michael's not really a jammer. He fakes everything out throughout from the start to the end, and then he brings it to the band and everyone sort of adds their bits, decorates it and just finishes it off. But so we used to just take the mick out of Michael a wee bit, saying he's a bit of a dictator, he's a, you know, a bit of a control freak there. So it started off, I brought that to Michael himself and just says, look, we could maybe call the group Dictator as a bit of a joke. It's also a reflection of our own personalities, because Dictator as a whole, we just do whatever we want to do, whether it's creatively or whether it's what we're doing on our socials. We just, if we feel like it's the right thing to do, then that's what we're going to do. We're not doing anything to please anyone else, not doing anything to please the algorithm or anything like that. So it's just a wee bit of, it's a wee bit tongue-in-cheek as to Michael's creative process and just a bit of a reflection of our own personalities too.
I was sent a message from Catherine on Twitter who wanted me to ask you, are you guys slightly political?
No.
So I call Zach the Zactivist, right? The thing is, right, we are political. I don't even know if we meant to be.
Yeah,
right?
It's not conscious. It wasn't a conscious effort to be it.
But you kind of just sit by and say nothing. If you've got something to say, and it's worthwhile saying, you might as well say it, right? You don't even want to just hide and try and play coy and just be like, you know, I mean, try and appease everybody. If you genuinely, like, a lot of things have happened in the last 12 months, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because it's been born out of no one having focus on anything else. But there's been a lot of things that have been brought to light. And it's been good because the level of discussion has been unbelievable, right? But you don't just kind of sit there in the background and just nod away, right? And just, you know what I mean? Ah, that's fine. Aye. If you've got opinions and you've got things that you want to talk about that are actually going to impact people or people's, like, my thing is trying to challenge people's views. That's the thing, right? So we're not just like being all political and being, oh, let's try and make a statement. We've never ever sat down and went, should we be political, right? But we do sit down and go, we need to like challenge people that are close to us on their views if we don't believe them to be correct, yeah, or that they don't understand if it's born out of naivety or anything like that. That's kind of where it's from. And especially with the songwriting, it's just that, like, I don't know, you could write songs about, I mean, anything, but it just feels like it's if it's worthwhile saying, then you might as well try and incorporate it in, especially if that's your views, because there's no point in trying to hide who you are from anybody because you'll get found out. So that's kind of where it's born from. And from our own perspective, we just want to understand if anybody has any issues or there's things that we need to improve on as people, we want to understand it. We want dialogue. We want to talk about it. We don't just want to sit there in the corner and believe that our views are the only views that anybody should ever hold. You know, it should be a case that we're challenged all the time. And I think that's the basis of why we can, we are, even if we don't mean to be political.
Yeah, on a personal level as well, I can be quite opinionated and passionate about stuff that I care about. And that's obviously going to bleed over into the music. I tend to be the one that's in control of the Twitter, so that's probably where maybe people are asking these questions, because I can't help myself but end up saying stuff that maybe I shouldn't be saying.
Is that the best I'm telling you? That's what it is.
But I also feel that as the band grows, as we get more fans and a bigger platform, we have a responsibility as well to maybe shine a light on certain issues that are going on. We never set out to be a political band or have any music, but considering that Anthem for a Doomed Youth was the first song that we released, I guess it was written in the stars anyway.
Yeah, you can see where that was coming from, and then you tie Wilf Odonan and being Scottish. Just now, the political system in Scotland is electric right now with talk of independence. How do you guys feel about that, and do you feel the youth have been ignored slightly?
I prefer not to comment. No, I'm only joking. we're not political, mate. We don't care. No, I'm only joking. Do you want to take this one, Zach?
Well, see if I'm being honest, mate. I don't pay attention particularly to the political parties and what's going on. I'm much more interested in sort of the social issues and let me try and word it correctly. It's just important for me to sort of shine a light on anything that I see is wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't pay attention to what political parties are saying or you know, what manifestos that they're trying to promise. I don't trust any of them, frankly.
Yeah, they all talk shite, don't they?
I'm not really a very political based person, although I'm very opinionated.
So that's the weird thing, is that I am quite not political, but I don't. Social issues are one part of it, and often the most vocal part of it, right? Mm-hmm. But like you say, Zach, people forget about everything else sometimes.
Yeah.
Not that you do that, but I'm just saying.
I would say I do.
But you know what I mean? So actually, when people complain or want to make change, they just think that the only way to do it is because they're focusing on one part of it, right? And I think that's sometimes what causes the kind of polarization, the political chat. Boys, yeah. I cannot believe I've just said that. We were talking about Squid Mags about 5-10 minutes ago, right? And I'm sitting there saying this. But being realistic about it, right? I'm quite open with my political views, right? I'm an SNP voter. I voted for independence. And I actually would like an independent Scotland, right?
I would.
That's just my own views. But I feel that sometimes people just believe in one thing or feel really strongly about one thing. And as a result, refuse to listen to any other of the sides of the argument.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right?
And I think that's the crux of the issue. Because instead of, it happens with people who are conspiracy theorists, right? But on all sides, no matter what gets presented to you, you know you're never going to change your mind, right? So if you, sometimes we're especially with the way that views, especially in the political sphere, right? People don't want to change their mind on the social issues that are important to them. They don't want to. So no matter what evidence is presented to them, they're never going to change their mind. They will rubbish it. They'll come up with a reason that the evidence in front of them is wrong, instead of actually going, I might be wrong here. And I think that's the difficulty, is you can't just have a simple discussion around politics. I've tried it so many times with so many friends. I've spoken to people who hold complete opposite views to me, and it always ends the same way. It ends up just getting, what can I put under the rug? Let's just agree to disagree and we're done, you know? And it's really hard.
Can I just touch on, you asked if you feel like the youth have been ignored or forgotten about. The areas that I grew up in, that we're from, Livingston, it's not like a particularly deprived area, but it has its deprived areas. But I certainly have always felt like the political parties have ignored or forgotten about us and forgotten about the youth. I'm sure you'll know yourself that Scotland has the highest drug death rate in Europe at the moment.
Absolutely.
It's something that I openly talk about, and I've been surrounded by it my entire life. One of our good friends actually has written a book about it as well, about his experiences. Shout out Aidan Martin in the book Euphoric Recall, if you get a chance to give it a read.
Brilliant. What's the book called?
Euphoric Recall.
And the author?
Aidan Martin.
Brilliant.
So he wrote a book about his experiences with drug abuse, but it seems to be, to me, from what I can see, is a really common issue throughout Scotland, small towns, big towns, cities, villages, wherever. It's everywhere that you go. It's something that people have been going on about for years and years. It's not like it's a new problem, but it's constantly ignored and nobody ever really seems to acknowledge it. So, yeah, have the youth been forgotten about? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a bit like Kevin Bridges said, oh, look, here's Braveheart. That's Scotland. Oh, here's Trainspotting. Oh, that's Scotland too.
That's it, man.
Guys, moving on. If you guys could open a show for any artist, who would it be and why?
Somebody shite so that nobody remembers him and thinks we're class. Nah. My main thing is someone I really want to see.
Yeah.
And I really want to see Gorillaz. The Gorillaz are one of the main inspiration for us. And kind of like their live shows with they got the what do you call it? Like they put the wee characters in that and they have the projectors and the big screens. I want to see that. So for me, hands down, Gorillaz.
Yeah, this is another question we get asked quite a bit, and I usually agree with Michael in saying the Gorillaz as well, because it's definitely an act I would like to see and enjoy the experience. But when you're given the opportunity to see any band whatsoever or any artist whatsoever, there's loads that have passed away that obviously never will get the chance to see. So I think I'm going to go with Prince, because Prince is one of those acts that have just got they've got an absolute legend about their live performance.
Jagger. Absolute Jagger.
I can imagine, mate. I can imagine. But that's something that I'm kind of gutted that I've never actually had the opportunity, and I would love to actually have seen them.
They always share it in these bands. There's always one that, you know, the one on Instagram that has his tap off next to the pool with his pals and, you know, has his can of beer and calls it lads. Which one he uses the shagger then?
Mate, I don't think it's any of us. That's not really our personalities at all, man. Yeah.
No,
we're not like that. Maybe once upon a time, but not these days.
Do you have any useless talents? Any talents you've got? You know, I was just talking to a band before, and one of them guys was able to do voices from The Simpsons and all that, and Family Guy, and it was brilliant.
Nice. I can juggle, mate. So, honestly,
I've been juggling my whole life.
Aye, exactly. I can juggle, man. I can juggle one-handed. Weirdest thing I've ever. I can't even mind. I think it was one of those like times where you just sit. Someone bought you. You know how when you're like your auntie, your mad auntie will come and give you like a. There's a juggling book, son. You're like, oh, smashing. I've always wanted to juggle, and then you just leave it, and then you're like cleaning your cupboard one day, and you're like, oh, there's that juggling book. I'm going to try that, and then you try it, and you can't do it, and then you get raging. So you're like, I'm going to do this. And then this is my personality is I'm like 3 weeks go by and I've juggled every day of my life. And I'm like, I need to juggle. And then I learn how to juggle and I'm like, right, I'm done juggling. I want to do something else. I just get so annoyed if I get to do something, figure out how to do it. And then that's me done.
I thought it was one of those tricks that you could only do while you were drunk, Michael.
No. You know, you're sitting in the house, you're having an empty house for a few days, and you suddenly start to seem to juggle.
Aye. No, to be fair, we were up at the Lewis Capaldi gig, and I was steaming, and I'm just sitting in the kitchen, like, boys, someone get this on video. I can juggle. It's like, looking back, like, why have I done that?
Apple straight for the fruit bowl, man.
Pretty sure I hit Joe Spear in the heat as well.
Lewis Capaldi or Jerry Cinnamon?
For me, Jerry Cinnamon, but I love Lewis. He's our local West Lothian hero, man. He's amazing what he does. He's amazing what he does for all of us.
I'll go Lewis.
He's a mental guy. If it wasn't for music, what would you guys be doing now?
Probably
in Livingston, it won't be much.
Just down the road up the A71, mate.
Not the A74.
Me, I would probably just be doing what my day job is anyway. I'm a heating engineer. Well, I'm technically unemployed now because I was working in British Gas, but I'll probably just still be doing that, mate. And even more miserable than I usually am.
See, my thing is, I work full time as well. I'm an IT project manager. But I reckon one thing I've always wanted to do, mate, is like, you know how like, when you hear about folk who make music for movies and that, like composing, that's something that's really interested. I'm really interested in that. And I do believe at some point in my life I'll dabble in it. I just, there's something about it. It's just, I think that's what I would love to do.
Like a Hans Zimmer and all that sort of thing.
Aye, mate, and it's such a weird thing, but like I really appreciate that. And as you'll have heard how I make songs, it's no dissimilar to how these boys operate. Yeah. And that's something I've just always been really interested in. Just can't afford their instruments, mate.
No, I can actually imagine some of the music in just in movies. I mean, some of it is absolutely brilliant. It's just to listen to you think, well, that could be a great music score, that.
Aye, that's it.
Where have you guys performed live and what has been the best so far and why?
We've not done many live shows, unfortunately, mate, because we released our first single November 2019, and then it was only, 4 months later, 4 or 5 months later, that we ended up going into lockdown, so we've not had the opportunity to play that many shows. Thankfully, we managed to headline Edinburgh's Sneaky Pete's, and I think that was February of 2020, just before the lockdown.
Aye.
I would say that was probably, it wasn't our only gig, but it was definitely our highlight. It was sort of our first headline show. We managed to sell it out, which we didn't expect to do. And it was just, it felt like a really special moment, like the first time the band really felt like a band on stage.
Amazing. I can't imagine that would be amazing if you're stepping out. What's your favourite song to perform?
Michael.
There's a song we've got coming out called Rubik's Cube. Hands down, my favourite.
Excellent. When can we expect Rubik's Cube?
Depending on what happens with the world, maybe by the end of the year. But we've no idea. We've no idea what's happening. We'll see. We'll play it by ear.
Give us a bit of background to Rubik's Cube. What's the inspiration behind Rubik's Cube?
That is a good question. to be fair, right? I really, really want to oversell this. And see, by the time you read the press kit about Rubik's, you'll be like, they're at it. I just had a Rubik's Cube in my bag, mate. I just thought, yeah, that'd be class to call a song Rubik's. So, yeah.
Is it not a load of nonsense as well? The lyrics and everything,
eh? Aye, everything about it is just a lot of nonsense.
I would say that's why it's the most fun song to play, because we deliberately wrote a song to have fun with.
Excellent. Sounds like how I'm looking forward to that. Guys, what would you say to young musicians trying to break out now, especially young musicians in estates and stuff like that in Scotland?
For me, I would say when I was young growing up and I grew up in an estate as well, I never had the confidence to really pursue music in the way that I probably should have. I probably should have tried to go to university or college or something like that and get in amongst the scene, but I was too set in my own ways growing up in Livy, so we went about it differently, and we were kind of a wee bit had the Oasis attitude where we thought we just owned everything and we could do what we want. That is not the right way to go about it, first of all. So I would advise, take the plunge, have the confidence to go and actually study and get involved with the scene. But I would also still encourage you to have a bit of a brass neck. Don't be afraid to ask for an opportunity if it presents itself.
I think I'd agree with that. The one thing I would say to any young musician that if I could hear back then, is don't stop, right? There's this mad notion of you get discovered and that's you suddenly become like Lewis Capaldi overnight. Doesn't work like that. It really doesn't work like that. Even the overnight success stories you hear of, they're not overnight success. What normally happens is they get found, discovered in a bar. Someone at a record label is like, guy, we really like you. Like, you want to come and kind of get signed with us. Then they disappear for 2 years. They go and write a million and one songs. They work with a million and one different people. By the time you hear them, they are like the most polished artist you'll ever hear. Polished version of what they were going to be, right?
it doesn't work like how you get it sold to you. And the more we learn about the music industry, the more we start to realize these things. And for us, everything that we do is just about like getting better and better. Mm-hmm. We don't care about, we're not precious about like trying to pretend that we're this overnight success. See, if you're an overnight success, it will just disappear just as quick as it can come. Right. And that's the difference, is that you have to work, you have to be professional about it, but don't stop. You'll only get better. And see, in 10 years after plugging away, doing the same thing and the same thing, what feels like the same thing, you level up and you get better and better and better. And the person who was like 10 years ago, who didn't have a clue about the music industry, 10 years into it, will know a hell of a lot more than anybody could want to know. And I think that's the difference. And I just, that's the one piece of advice I could ever impart on anybody, is just keep going and learning about how to get better.
I think we're a walking testament to that, Michael, or we know.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what, that's the way that we approach that. Way that we approach this whole thing, you know.
And what's the best advice you've been given? And by who?
Ooh.
So I can't remember who gave me this advice, but it actually pops up a lot. And I think one of the most important things that a musician can do is to not be a dick. As simple as that. So many people just feel like they deserve opportunities, but they need to earn it. And they can be quite rude in the music industry. I think that that's always going to be detrimental to you in life in general.
I like that. Don't be a dick. I can imagine it now on your social media. Oh, you. We saw you performing live being a dick.
Honestly, man, you wouldn't believe the amount of people. And I think some people think it's like a badge of honour to wear on their sleeve. Like, I'm a dick. And you're like, nobody comes in when someone's like acting like an absolute arsehole. No one, when they leave the room, goes, that's class, that, eh? Every single person, like, he's a dick. I never, ever want to work with him or see him again in my life. That's what happens. And so whenever you hear about these mad artists who have somehow made it against the grain and they're arseholes, then he ever be. And that's the best bit of advice, that you're right. And we hear it quite a lot. It's like, just don't be a dick. And see, if you're no, people stick by you. It makes a difference.
What's your favourite Scottish word that you've used and folk have said? What does that mean?
There's actually quite a few. I work with a load of people down in London, right? And it's just certain, just random things. I think dreek, right?
Dreek.
See, when you say that, it's like, it's just not quite rainy. It's just not quite, like, you know what I mean? So you're just like, it's off your dreek. And then they're like, what does that mean? And I'm like, it's kind of, I don't know. you can't really describe it that well to someone. You're just like, it's a wee bit shite, but it's not that bad. Normally getting that smell of the rain on the pavement, it's a bit dreek, you know?
The only one I can think is when you're speaking to somebody that isn't from Scotland and you describe them as a good cunt, and they don't take it for the compliment that it's meant as.
It's typical Scotland, isn't it? You couldn't just say, "Ah, oh, you're all right." No, you're a good cunt. It's like a double barrel, isn't it? My favourite was dreepy. Whenever I say dreepy, they're like, "What? The dreepy? You hang off a wall?" And they're like, "Do you just mean hang off the wall?" I'm like, pardon? Don't you mean hang off the wall? No, deep. Or when I say gutties, I go like, oh, you're stood in my gutties. They're like, you're what, sorry? I didn't quite get what you said there.
See, nah, one of the best ones is messages.
Oh, I'm going for the messages.
I'm just going to nip out for my messages. And they're like, what messages? Like, you go to the post office? You're like, nah. I'm going to go up.
To do social media deals at the co-op.
Exactly.
digital vinyl or CD, which do you prefer?
I just got a new vinyl player, so I'm going to go with vinyl.
Good man.
I think vinyl as well. I've got a lot of time for the digital space, right? Because I'm trying to be forward thinking, but you can't beat a vinyl.
Nah, it's the best sound in the world. Do you still feel radio is an important outlet considering all the platforms available?
It's not essential, but it's still important. It still serves a purpose. I listen to the radio every single day and I enjoy it. I listen to BBC Radio 6 music every single morning and I still regularly discover new music through radio stations. So it's not essential anymore. No, I don't really listen to Steve Lamack. Lauren Laverne's my favourite, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's essential. New artists don't need it anymore. but it's still important. It still plays a part.
Yeah, I think everything that we, how we consume media is changing. So it's like podcasts and see having it on demand. Me personally, I can't remember the last time I listened to the radio live. If there's a really good show, I'll stick it on like BBC Sounds or that, or some other format. And it's actually strange. It's the same way like streaming telly. It's really important. Radio is a really, really important medium, but it's no the same as it used to be. Actually, they get their, I mean, the majority of their plays after the radio show, yeah, which is mental.
When a podcast approaches you, what makes you say, do you know what, I'll do that?
We've never said no yet, have we, Michael?
Zach messaging us saying, right, boys, we have a podcast tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Who's taking it?
I should probably do a bit more due diligence, but I just say, if somebody's kind enough to ask us to come onto their show to talk about us and our music, then we're always going to say yes. It's a privilege for us.
Aye. Brilliant. That's excellent, guys. You know, how do you see the music industry in, say, 10 years?
That is a very good question. And if I could predict that, mate, I'd be a millionaire in like 5 years. Right? I think what will happen is, right, songs are getting shorter. I know that sounds really weird, right? Songs are getting shorter. And I reckon it will be like 2-minute songs. I genuinely, just because the way the world is now, you just want wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. That's what everybody wants. They just want to hear, consume, cheery bye, on to the next one, right? And you look at like TikTok, you look at like the way Instagram's gone now, it's just condensing and condensing, and it's all about volume, right? So you'll probably get like, I reckon in 10 years' time, there'll be like an album released with like 28 songs, and it'll be half a length of what a normal album would be. But I just think that, see the way that you'll know this, right? But, and I know this as well, but artists release an album, they go on a hiatus for like a year, maybe a year and a half. They go and find themselves. They go to rehab in Bali, all this stuff, right? And you're like, you hear about it and it's like, oh, mad. And then they're no relevant. And then they release another album and they're suddenly everywhere again. And you're like, oh, it's amazing. It's class. Then they go on another big hiatus. That'll not happen anymore. That'll not happen. What will happen is it will need to be consistent. And like, it's already happening with Spotify, where you have to just keep releasing and keep releasing. And look, we didn't agree with it. We prefer the way the world works before, but you have to get on with the agenda or you'll be left by the wayside. And I reckon, see, instead of albums, I think you'll just keep getting singles or small track EPs where it'll just be condensed versions of, we've got a big mad EP, it's 3 songs. I think that's what happened. That's my own view, but let me use that.
I will, to be honest, if I can't predict for the whole world, but the future for the UK music industry looks kind of bleak at the moment. If without government intervention, sort of dealing with the touring issue, I don't know if any of you have heard about this, but a lot of sort of mid-level bands, indie bands especially, tend to make most of their money from touring Europe.
Yep.
And that's pretty much impossible now, just due to all the new Brexit regulations. So if something isn't done about that, then I think you're going to find that most sort of low-level independent bands, they're going to disappear because they're not going to be able to fund themselves. And you're going to be left with nothing but really the superstars, the people that are signed to major labels that have loads of financial backing. And to be honest, that sounds pretty dull to me.
Yeah, I was going to move on to that. Obviously, Pink Floyd wrote a song called Welcome to the Machine, which pretty much lays into the music industry. How do you feel the music industry is treating independent musicians and new bands coming through?
I'd say me and Michael are probably a wee bit divided in this opinion. But I kind of feel like the music industry itself doesn't allow for a lot of opportunities for independent artists. But the world has opened up so much now with online that there's loads of opportunities. You just need to create them yourself. So you don't need the machine for anymore. You don't need the machine to be successful.
Actually, it's not that divided, man. I don't actually think it is a very good picture now, right? But it's because of the existing ways that people have made money in the past don't work. It doesn't work like that anymore. And so it's like this, you have to keep exploring and finding out like what the music industry actually is. And I said, we know people who you could class as the music industry who are phenomenal, brand new, want to give you all the kudos in the world. any way, shape, or form they can help you, they will. But then you go and like try and fire your EP into Sony, they'll tell you where to get to, right? and it's so difficult to kind of put. It's easy to lash out at the big boys who are controlling the entire music industry, like Spotify. The boy came out and said, "Well, artists just have to release more music." Boy, can he write a song to save himself? And he's telling us how to work, you know. Right. And you're sitting there, and we get something like 0.006 pence a stream. That's brutal. That makes you, that infuriates you, and you kind of put it in the one bucket. You know what I mean? You have to realize that there's good people and bad people, and it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean the Spotify thing it's terrible what they pay us, right? We don't make a lot of money, but at the same time, going back to that tweet that you brought up earlier about the different cities, cut for our last single that we've just released, we've got more listens in London than we have in our hometown of Livingston. Before Spotify and before all this technology, nobody in London would have ever even had the opportunity to hear of us. So it's a catch-22, I suppose.
So how do you... What are your hopes for the band for the future?
World domination.
They want to take over the world. It's like Pinky in the Brain. What are we doing to that, Brian?
Do you want to take this one, Zach, or you what? Because I've got my own view as well.
So for me, mate, I just want to continue to create music and everything that goes along with the music, the artwork and the way we present ourselves, just stuff that I can be proud of consistently. So I have no grand ambitions particularly. Yes, I want to be successful. Yes, I want to be able to create music as my full-time job, but the most important thing to me is just putting something out that I can be proud of and I'm happy to put a stamp in my name against.
So I'm like that's something, that's one part of it, right? For me, I just want to have like I don't know how to describe it other than like a devoted set of fans, right? Yeah. I love new people listening to our music and tweeting us, and it's amazing, but I also like that like no one seems to kind of leave us after they join us. Right? It kind of feels like a wee gang, right? And I genuinely just want to see that grow and grow and grow and see when it comes to shows. I don't care. Like, I want to release songs. I want to get like a number one. You want to be number one in the album charts. You want to do this. But I want to sell out shows to people who want to be at the shows. I then want people who are there videoing it on Instagram and they're with their, like, you know what I mean, their mates, and just like to say that they've ticked the box to come and see us. I really just want it to be like a proper intimate show, no matter if there's 500 people in the room or if we're selling out the Hydro three nights in a row. I want people to actually want to come and see us and be a part of it. And that's for me, we would need to make money out of music to do that, right? Yeah. And that's probably the point. If we ever make money out of music enough to sustain ourselves to live, then that's me made it. Like, I used to wonder what it meant to make it. That's me made it. If we can go and sell shows where you're not having to go on tour for a year, leave your family, if you can sell shows to the right people at the right time, make the money that you need, that's my goal. That's, you know what I mean? Just enjoy making music and people enjoy the music you make. That's the ultimate end goal.
You have a great rapport with your fans, but you mentioned family. How important is family to you guys?
Like you tell that, Michael.
It's massive. Absolutely massive. See, when you're younger, you hear about touring musicians and like you have to go away for like months and months on end and stuff like that. And that's what kind of worries you about. I mean, could you hack it? Could you hack doing that? Because that's how you hear about all these people who are washed up, depressed and missing our families, and that's what happens. But I actually think that you really need to kind of grow a bit of a backbone and realise that it's up to you to decide how that works. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to go on tour for 7 days a week for 2 years. That doesn't have to happen. It does if you want to make absolutely like millions and millions of quid. But actually, if you prioritise your family more than just solely making it, then you can actually have a kind of fine balance. But I just think, like, I mean, even when I had COVID there, right, friends and family, man, it makes the biggest difference. Just to call you, perk you up, ask how you're doing. And like, I mean, my cousin phoned me and he was like, I can't believe you feel like this. I'm really like, they're so gutted for you. And like, and it just kind of makes you feel better that people care about you, right? And so it's really important to me, really. And it's actually come through in some of the music and stuff like that, where you talk about things. And that's a huge part of my life. And I think when you're younger, you kind of put it to the side. But you realise as you get older, you're like, no, it's actually one of the most important, if not the most important thing in life. to have people like that around you.
That's brilliant. Zach?
Yeah, I totally agree. Michael and I have had quite a few discussions on this about the sort of trying to make sure that we can get like a good balance between the music and our family. Our drummer, he's got two wee boys. So we understand already that it's not going to really be feasible for us to be doing big, massive tours. So it's important for us to strike a really nice balance. And if that means sacrificing money over family time, then that's absolutely what we intend to do. But yeah, it's obviously really important to us.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Right, guys, so you're on tour. Let's say you're on tour and you're in Las Vegas. You've had a great show and your boys are down at the bar waiting for you and you're coming down the elevator and they get stuck. Who would you least want to be stuck in an elevator with and why?
Michael.
Joe, the bass player, because he's absolutely petrified he lifts, right? And so he'd be sitting there going like, I need it this thing. And I reckon I'd just the second-hand stress is not worth it. I'd absolutely hate to be stuck in a lift with Joe because he's petrified. I'd be freaking out, I know. You know what I mean?
I hate these questions, mate, because I hate having to like pinpoint something. Like, I didn't like him. I didn't want to spend any time with him.
Oh, no, I love Joe. But Joe in that situation wouldn't be the same.
Imagine if you were stuck in an elevator with someone like, you know, I don't know, what's his name? Boris Johnson or something like that, or, you know.
I would love
that. I mean, that's the kind of guys that make you want to pull your teeth out and say, do you know what, I don't need painkillers, I don't need a dentist, I'll do this myself. It's better than listening to you.
Nah, I wouldn't mind being just me and him in a wee elevator myself, mate. That would be all right.
Anyway, release a bit of stress in it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, guys, look, it's been amazing talking to you guys, and I love your music, and long may it continue. I'm really looking forward to the future for you guys. I'm going to finish by playing your latest single. Would you like to introduce it, guys?
Yeah, on you go, Michael.
Thanks. how's it going? This is Hide and Seek. We've been Dictator. Thanks very much for having us on the podcast.
But you take care, guys. I'm Dennis Devlin. It's the NMF Podcast, and this is the Dictator Band.
Much more sexy tracks coming up.
Together, we felt like forever. Don't you cry, it'll be alright. Just follow the music, let it lead you straight to my arms, to my. No more happily ever after. We wrote our names down different paths. Come on, you know, will you follow some music? Can it lead you away from my arms? Why weren't you there from the start? Where were you when I needed you there? Well, you weren't by my side. Well, tell me how that's fair. Now listen when I say to you, this ain't high and see. You say you love me once, now I'm obsolete. This ain't high. forever laughing and smiling. I looked into your eyes and I lost my mind, but it was worth it and I would do it again just to touch you and breathe in your skin. Hope you go to let me in. Inside, though I'm still with you, we were reckless and in love, but we grew up so out of touch. No matter what there's been, all the days in between, I still love you. But where were you when I needed you there? Well, tell me how that's fair. Where were you when I needed you there? We were by my side. Now listen when I say to you, this ain't hide and seek. You say saying hide and seek, the same song game that we can be. Oh, oh, I,
son, you're gonna have to go. Write an anthem for the doomed youth, cause you're not gonna love them. We don't love you, don't trust the lies that have stuck like glue, no matter what you put us through. Thank you.
be surprised when we rise.
Just to let you violate your mercy.
spinning your favorites of yesterday and today.
The best songs on the radio. This is my only favorite station.